So good morning, everybody. Today I present to you preliminary results of a study which we actually started a long while ago. It was a bit delayed due to the fact that our animal scanner at UIC crashed and was down for over a year. And then this is a collaboration with Dr. Oli Lazarov, who is a colleague from the Department of Cell Biology, an expert in animal models of familial Alzheimer's disease. So she prepared all these models for us and the animals, and then the scanner basically broke and was down, and when the scanner was repaired, then the animals were not there anymore. So there was a slight delay. But now we are finally at a point that we are getting numbers that are presentable, but they are not still that very high. Therefore, I still call this preliminary results. I want to let you know that my student, Shreyan Majumdar, my PhD student, is the person who basically conducted the study and had the main work here. So, as most of you know, Alzheimer's disease is a neurodegenerative disease for which there is currently no cure. It's characterized by a decline in cognitive function and memory loss. It's characterized by a formation of alpha amyloid beta plaques and also tangles of tau proteins. So the amyloid beta plaques, the understanding is that they develop relatively early and obstruct then the cell signaling pathways, whereas those tangles, the twisted strands, tangles of the tau protein occur relatively late, is my understanding, because they occur then at the same time at cell death, or shortly prior to cell death. So when those tau proteins there occur, it's basically too late to use this information for diagnosis or for early diagnosis. So the objective of this study overall is to test the early diagnostic potential of MRE for Alzheimer disease using mouse models of familial Alzheimer's disease. And here the motivation was also that we know from in vivo human studies already that analyzed brain stiffness at very late stages of the disease, that there is a measurable drop in brain stiffness, but also there are a few, I don't want to say conflicting results, but there is a study that observed that in the hippocampus of an Alzheimer mouse model, it came to a decrease in brain stiffness, but then over a time, also the brain solidified again or stiffened again. So here we have a look now at two distinct models of familial Alzheimer's disease. Please don't nail me there on those abbreviations. The first one is APPSWE, as my colleague Oli Lazarov told me, is a not so aggressive model of Alzheimer disease, where those amyloid beta plaques occur after 5 or 6 months in significant amounts that they are measurable, whereas the second one is a more aggressive model of Alzheimer's disease, where the pathology occurs early, and we performed MRE here at the age of 3 to 4 months. So just most of you, of course, know how the setup of an MRE experiment looks like with a function generator, that this needs to be then triggered to the MRI machine. I just show this to you here so that you get an idea about how we do this in principle at UIC for mouse brain MRE. It's a PVC pipe that we cut open, and then inside this open area we placed a piezoelectric stack that is connected over a bar to a loop, and then the teeth of the mouse are attached to the loop so that a shaking movement is imposed on the mouse head. And this setup with the mouse is prepared outside the scanner. The mouse is already anesthetized outside the scanner, and then it's the whole PVC pipe is inserted into the 9.40 Agilent MRI. Here, for you summarized the sequence parameters that we used. We performed the measurements at an actuation frequency of 1,000 hertz. The effective resolution was isotropic 250 micrometers. We used 10 cycles of a motion encoding gradient that was matched to the vibration. And it was a spin echo sequence that we used. Unfortunately, the EPI sequence on the Agilent scanner is not working. So even before MRI, just the standard MRI sequence, that's why we are stuck using the spin echo sequence, which takes, of course, much longer than the API sequence, but we compensate at least a bit of the increased measurement time by using the SLIM technique, which is an acquisition concept that we developed at UIC, where basically all three motion components of the displacement can be acquired simultaneously in a time-resolved MRI experiments using 8 time steps, as indicated here on this slide, with the different lines. That's basically the lowercase n lines correspond to a specific time point. And as you see, all three motion encoding gradient projections are applied simultaneously. However, there's a direction-dependent delta t time interval, which the individual MEG projections are shifted in time. And this has the result that the three motion encoding directions, or the three motion directions, are encoded with apparent different frequencies after performing a Fourier transform to the temporally resolved multi-directional MRI acquisition, as is indicated here. So it has the SLIM technique has a drawback, if I can call it like this, that it involves an increase in the echo time due to the mutual shifting of the motion encoding gradients. This can be minimized by exploiting periodicity and tree of cosine and sinus functions, but there's still at least a 25% increase of the echo time, 25% of the vibration period. So I admit that using or performing human MRI scans, this increase in echo time might be quite significant, because a lot of times only one cycle of the encoding gradient is used. But in the animal scans, where we use 10 cycles of the motion encoding gradients, 25% of the vibration period is a very small number, so we hardly see any differences there. So that is how our wave images look like, just so that you get an example. Maybe it would have been more clever here if Shreyan would have shown the images after application of the curl, because here still the compression wave is superimposed on these images. And we calculated then the storage modulus, which I now refer to further on as stiffness, probably also, by first applying a curl to the 3D wave images in order to filter out the compression wave. Then we typically use a noise filter, a Butterworth bandpass of order 2 with a limit of 6 pixels. And then this is the result of a direct inversion of the algebraic equation for obtaining the stiffness map. And we then averaged the complex modulus value over 3, or actually 4 regions of interest, the whole brain, then the hippocampal area, the cerebral cortex, and the rest of the brain, which is defined by whole brain minus the hippocampus area and the cerebral cortex. So Shreyan basically looked into an anatomy book and to a brain atlas of the mouse, and then manually segmented those areas. So maybe it doesn't 100% correspond to the hippocampal area and to the cortex, but as you see there, highlighted in red and blue colors, that are the areas that he segmented. Here now summarized the mouse models that we used. As I indicated in the beginning, one is less aggressive, the other one on the right-hand side is more aggressive. Both models have in common that they are transgenic, using mutant forms of the proteins here in order to create this Alzheimer-related pathologies. They are characterized by increased levels of amyloid beta plaque deposition, but these tangles of the tau proteins are not observed in these mice. My colleague, Dr. Lazarov, told me that those mice are difficult to raise, that actually also create then those tau proteins. So the differences are that usually significant amounts of alpha beta proteins for the less aggressive model are visible at 6 months. Neural loss occurs at 8 months or later. The aggressive model develops amyloid pathology at 2 months and cognitive deficits at 4 to 6 months. So therefore, we already can declare, since we know that the measurements were taken at 3 months, that neuronal loss shouldn't contribute to the stiffness changes that we measure here. These are now the results for the less aggressive model. As we see, a few amyloid plaques were also visible there, even at 3 to 4 months. And we see that in general, the cortex stiffness is lower than the stiffness of the rest of the brain and of the hippocampus. We performed measurements here using 4 animals, 4 controls, and 4 of the diseased models. The p-value for finding this softening in the hippocampus is on the order of 0.053 or so almost significant. I mean, in the end, some mathematicians define that smaller than 0.05 is significant. I would hope that when we increase now the sample size in the model, that we will find there a true significant difference with 0.05 or much lower. Also in the cortex, with this small sample size, we are at p equals 0.06 or so. But interestingly, we see this difference for the less aggressive model only in the hippocampus and maybe in the cortex, but not in the rest of the brain. So the results for the more aggressive models then surprised us a lot, because here we actually see then an increase of the stiffness. So the pathology report, as expected here from the fluorescence microscopic analysis, shows more amyloid plaques that were found in all regions of the brain. But it comes obviously to a stiffening of the brain, which is here using 5 animals for controls and for the disease model, even significant in the whole brain. And maybe with a higher number of animals, we will see this also then in the hippocampus area. So the results are a bit conflicting and lead us to the conclusion that there must be something else going on in addition to the amyloid plaque protein that contributes to the stiffness. So the idea could also be that because we see with a small amount of amyloid plaque depositions that these small amounts of plaques somehow hurt the mechanical connectivity of the brain, whereas then we have a lot of these amyloid plaques which are described to be sticky by nature, that they maybe come together and unite to a mechanical network that provides more support to the brain. But this is at this point just speculation. So in conclusion, we found that the cortex area of the brain is softer than other brain regions. That was found in both animal models and also in both controls, approximately by a factor of 30%. The formation of amyloid beta plaques was observed in both animal models, and as expected, it was the quantity was less in the less aggressive models, but our data indicate that amyloid beta pathology alone may not be responsible for stiffness changes. And the next steps of this study, where I presented you here some preliminary data, is that we will increase the sample size at 3 months. We will also already started performing measurements with the more aggressive model at 1 month. And we also want to include in the future in the histology report pathological analysis of inflammation markers. Okay, thank you very much for listening.
We have time for one quick question, please. Okay.
Models as well? Like, do you see more brain atrophy in the more aggressive one versus the softer one?
Oh, we didn't measure anything like volume changes or so.